Good to see everybody here, and this is my first time to be here at this congregation. I knew about it when it started, but I was out of the country, so I haven't been here until now. And it's good to meet all of you who are worshiping with my parents, and it's great to be able to finally get a face to some of the names and all of that. I want to talk tonight about God's work in South Africa especially, and a little bit about the work in Nigeria. So I'll talk about the work that I'm doing on behalf of the Lord, and a little bit about some of the men that I work with as well. I've been over in South Africa for about 3 years now. I went in at the end of January 2006, and so I've had a little bit of time to settle in. For those who don't know, South Africa is this little country right at the bottom of the continent of Africa, and you probably have already heard all of that from my grandfather. I think he was here not too long ago. We live here in this place called Ashawi, on the eastern side of South Africa. And this is the house where we live. This is my grandparents' house. It's a good house. It's pretty nice. It has a good yard to play soccer in. And it's a secure place. You can see the gate here has the spikes on top to discourage the people who would like to steal anything. And there's razor wire on the fencing around. That's just the way everybody in South Africa does it. Crime is a reality. It's pretty bad there, but it's not all that dangerous to be in South Africa. If you want to come and visit, you don't need to worry about the crime. Really, I've been there for 3 years. I don't worry about it. I haven't had anything really bad happen while I've been there. And nobody's tried to break into the house for 3 years at least. So I'm not too worried about the crime there. These are my grandparents, but you already know, you've already met them. Paul and Helen Williams, that I live with them. My grandmother, of course, is not normally in the wheelchair. This was taken when she had a fall, and she was recovering from that. But you can see her personality here. She's in a wheelchair, she's cooking, and she's got a big smile on her face. So that's just the way my grandmother is. Now, this is the man that I work with all the time, Mzwandile Gazu. He is 32 years old now. He's been preaching, I think, for about 14 years. And this is his wife, Amanda, and their daughter, Ezile. And they have another child due the end of January. Now, Mzwandile was my main interpreter when I first moved to South Africa. He would go with me everywhere, and sometimes He would teach the Bible class, and I'd just sit there, because it's all in Zulu. And then I would preach, and he would interpret into Zulu. Now we pretty much just take turns going places. I use different men to interpret for me. And but we work together all the time. We see each other almost every day. And he's a really good man. I can't recommend anybody higher than him as far as his character. And he's a good preacher, too. I kind of call him a walking concordance. If I can't find the passage, I just say, Mzwandile, where is this verse? And he'll tell me. This is the church at Ashawi, where my grandfather preaches. And I'm there on Sunday nights and on Wednesday nights. And once a month now, I get to be there on Sunday mornings. So It's a pretty good-sized congregation. About 60 people will meet there on Sunday morning. Not so many Sunday night and Wednesday night, but that's partly a problem with transportation. The people don't have their own cars, and we can't go fetch everybody at night. So it's probably the most mature congregation among the Zulus, I believe. My grandfather's been there for 25 years. That's where the gospel started, taking root from our records in Zululand. And so the other congregations have kind of spread out from there. So there's quite a few good, mature men there, but they're not all that old. They're probably the oldest mature Christian there would be in his early 40s. And they were converted when they were in high school, so they've been growing. I teach a young people's class there in Ishawi on Fridays. And I usually have about 10 to 15 students in that class. It's probably my favorite class that I teach out there. It's very exciting because we get to go through the whole Bible and they learn. And that's what's really exciting is when you see people actually learning. And they're at the age where they can think a lot. And they do think a lot. Not all of them. Not all of them think. Not all of them learn. But most of them do. And it's a really nice class. We've been through the whole Bible one time. And we've started back over. And I'm going through it slower now. There's a couple of brethren who've taken over it while I'm out of the country. Trying to go into more detail and hit some things that we skipped the first time through. And also, I've been teaching them the books of the Bible. I think they pretty much have it down now. At least in English, they can say the books of the Old Testament in English. Maybe not in Zulu, but it's good enough. So that's where I live, is in Ishawi. And so I do a lot of work with the congregation there. I also teach the men on Wednesday nights when I'm there. And that's a good class. But mostly on Sunday mornings, there's two different congregations where I'll be. One of them is at Nongoma. You can see Mzwandile on the front row here. This is an old picture of when I first started going out there. We now take turns going out to Nongoma. We were doing that for about 2 years, and just recently, a few of the other brethren from Ishawi have decided that they can help us, and they're taking turns with us. That's why we're able to be at Ishawi one Sunday a month in the morning. So it's a small congregation. We leave about 7 o'clock in the morning, drive 3 hours, fetch people, and go to this high school, and we meet in the high school classroom. And we worship there. There's about 10 people usually in that congregation. It used to be a pretty big congregation. They had a tent meeting out there where they just baptized a whole lot of people. And then there was a young man there that they had a lot of confidence in. They thought he was a good guy, even though he was a fairly new Christian, and they encouraged him to preach. And he fooled them for a long time. It turned out he was a fornicator, and it just destroyed the church, and now there's very few people left. That man is dead now. He died from AIDS, but he left a lot of damage. So a lot of these people that you see here are not there anymore. They've moved away to find jobs or go to college. You can't get a job in Nongoma. It's just, there's nothing there. So you have to go to the city somewhere if you want a job. But there are some others who have moved back. They couldn't find jobs anywhere else, so they just moved back home. There's one lady you can't see in this picture, Sister Nkosi. She has AIDS, but that's not her fault. Her husband, as many of the Zulu men do, he found a job in the city, and so he lives out there. He only comes home on the holidays, and so she only sees him a couple of times a year. But he has girlfriends out where he is, and so he picked up the HIV virus and brought it home to her. And he's very sick right now. I don't know if he's going to live much longer. But she's actually fairly healthy, even though she has HIV. I don't know if you can call it AIDS at this point, because she's not very sick with it. But anyway, she's a wonderful lady. And three of her grandchildren are very faithful Christians out there. Then the other congregation that I work with is the church in Flagstaff. The actual place is called Opozo, but Flagstaff is the nearest town where you can go and shop, and it's easier to say. So we just call it Flagstaff. And it started from a tent meeting. Here you can see the preachers that were at the tent meeting, besides myself. On the left there is Simon Sikikani. He's kind of crippled. He can walk with a brace. He had polio as a child, and so one of his legs just won't work. But he can put a brace on it, especially designed for him, and he can walk with it and unhitch it when he needs to sit down and all of that. He's a great guy. He's a really funny guy. But he's a good preacher, especially on issues of morality. Everybody's favorite sermon of his is the works of the flesh. He usually preaches that on a Friday night when we get all the drunks in there. But he knows how to preach to where the people are. He knows just exactly how they think, how they live, and he knows how to address it in his preaching. And he does a great job with that. Then this man in the middle is Timbe Nkosi Aplani. He's an Oza man. The Ozas are a tribe that lives next to the Zulus. And they speak a very similar language. They can communicate with each other without any problem, pretty much. So he usually just interprets for me when we're in the Oza areas. Mzwandile can do that, but it's better to have a native speaker interpret. So he doesn't do a whole lot of the actual preaching, but he helps out a lot in other ways. He was stabbed in the neck a few years ago in a robbery, and his arm, I guess it was his left arm, was paralyzed. He just couldn't use it. But over time, he's gained the use of his arm back. It's just his hand now that he can just barely move it. So he's trying to use it as much as possible and try to get that back. But he's a good man, very hardworking. In the area where he works, I think he's probably the only good preacher within 100 miles at least, probably more than that. He works with about four different congregations. And, he doesn't get much support. He gets very little support. He lives in a place where you wouldn't want to live. For the past year and a half at least, he's been living in just one room with his wife and child. And that's their kitchen, their bedroom, and everything. Most of it's taken up by the bed. He does have a two-room house now that he's about to move into, so that's a good thing for him. But he doesn't complain about all of that, especially not since he got married. He's pretty happy. But he is a really hardworking man, and I like to work with him. And then on the right is Mzwandile. And so we came out here to Flagstaff This is where Amanda Gazu, Mzwandili's wife, this is where she grew up. And we stayed with her grandparents out there. They're not Christians, they're Methodists. But they didn't mind us staying there and pitching the tent and all of that. So we baptized about 7 people out there. The one on the left was already a Christian. That's Amanda's cousin. So she was the only Christian out there at the time. And then these other 2 girls were baptized, and neither one of them are faithful today. And this happens a lot in the tent meetings and elsewhere. We baptize people, and sometimes they just disappear immediately. You know, they weren't really committed at all. And sometimes they come for a while, and then they go back to their old sins. And we try to help them, but there's only so much we can do when they just want to give up. And I think this girl on the right, Bulelwa, she died earlier this year from AIDS. So that's the result of her going back into sin. So it's really sad. Well, I'll tell you about the tent meetings a little bit. We load up this trailer with 10 benches. These benches were designed by Marty Broadwell from Atlanta, if you know him. And they're a great design. Brother Maydell built these benches. And you can fold them up and stick them in this little trailer. And then you unfold them and put them up, and they're solid. And they're really great benches. And then we load everything else, the speakers, the generator, and our luggage and everything into the back of my pickup truck with the canopy on it. And here you can see some of the other people who came with us to Flagstaff. This guy here, I call him Azaria the Baptist. We always get him to do the baptizing for us if he's with us. And then the girl on the right is Lungile. And she, since this time, she went back into sin, but she's now repented. And she has a baby now, but she is, I think, repented. So we're happy about that. So we put up the tent, and we just find a clear spot, or we clear it off ourselves, and we put it up. It takes about an hour and a half, I guess, to put up the tent. And so it's sitting there. People know it's there. And at night, they hear the speakers when we start singing, and they come. Now, I'm not a big fan of having Church of Christ written on the side of the tent. This is my grandfather's tent. It gives people a denominational idea. You know, they want to know, what denomination is this, the Church of Christ? And we always have to preach about what is the Church of Christ. And, of course, you know, we explain it's not a name. Jesus didn't name the church. We don't have a right to either. And it's just a description of what we're trying to be, the church that belongs to Christ. We sometimes have to get our own water. None of the places we go have indoor plumbing or anything like that. None of the places have electricity either. We do that on purpose. You know why we pick places without electricity? Where there's electricity, there's television. Where there's television, nobody wants to come to the tent meeting. Well, so we go to these places and we have to get water. Usually we actually can get water from a tank. There will be a storage tank, and we can just use that, you know, to fill the buckets, whatever. In this place, those were dry. This is at Flagstaff. Again, and so Amanda just went down to where there was a little bit of flowing water, because you don't want to get still water. And she dipped it out little bit by little bit. She wouldn't let us guys do it at all. She said, no, you guys don't know what you're doing. You're going to get dirt in the water. and you were going to get sick. So she did it all. But it makes you appreciate the passage where Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, and he says, "I'm going to give you water that you won't ever be thirsty again." And she says, "Oh, give it to me. I don't want to keep coming out here and drawing water. You know, it's hard work." So when we're baptizing people, we find water that people aren't using to drink. Here they wash clothes and the kids go swimming and that kind of thing. So it's a good spot to baptize people. This man here is Zamile. He's one of those who is still faithful out at Flagstaff. He's a really good guy. He may go to jail soon because he committed a crime a while back in rebellion against the school. They burned some things at the school. The students had a revolt. And he did that, but he has repented, really. And so he's willing to face whatever consequences there are for it. But anyway, he's a good guy. He's shaved he's cut off the dreadlocks. That generally gives people a bad idea in South Africa, because that indicates that you're a Rastafarian. That's a religion. I'm not sure where it's from, actually. But you know the Jamaicans that smoke the marijuana? They have the dreadlocks and they listen to reggae. Well, that's the religion. That's Rastafarianism. And it's pretty big in South Africa. Okay, so that's the other congregation that I work with is at Flagstaff. And Mzwandile and I take turns going out there. It's about 6 hours from Ashawi. And so we usually leave on Saturday, spend the night, come back Sunday. All right. Another church that began from a tent meeting is out at Seymour. This is where Timbinkosi Aplani is from. It's 14 hours away from Ashawi, so we don't make a whole lot of trips out there. But Timbinkosi works with the church there now. He goes about twice a month. This is his mother. She was a Christian already. He had converted her, and she was the only Christian out at Seymour. I guess I was saying the wrong thing. It's at Seymour. And you can see her kitchen behind her here. You like that kitchen? Do you like a kitchen like that? They can cook some pretty good food in that kitchen. Well, we baptized 17 people in that tent meeting. You know, that's 2 weeks. That we usually preach for 2 weeks in a tent meeting. And here you can see a few of the younger ones queued up to be baptized. And, they look pretty young, don't they? And they are. But amazingly, most of them are still faithful today. I was amazed by that when I was talking with Timbinkosi a long time later, you know. And he was telling me that almost all of them are still faithful. Some of them had fallen away, and Mzwandile and I went out there for Timbinkosi's mother's funeral. She died earlier this year. And Mzwandile talked with some of them who were living their lives in rebellion against God, and he talked some sense into them. And so later on we found out they had repented. And so I think there's only a few of them who've really gone away from God now. All right, so tent meetings are a huge part of the work in South Africa, at least in the Zululand and Xhosa area. Now, I've also made 2 trips to Nigeria with my grandfather. We went there for 6 weeks the first time, and that was too long for my grandfather, and I think for our host, too, because he had to drive us all around Nigeria for that time, had to be away from his family, and that's a long time. So the next time we went for 3 weeks, and we had a different host. The first time we were with Manny Ebong here on the left, And then Sunday, Iandare was with us the second time. Sunday is an older, he's older than Manny and a little bit more reserved. And he's been an elder before. I think the other elder in that congregation had passed away. And so they were thinking of appointing elders again. I don't know if they have yet or not. But he is a really great guy. I have a lot of respect for him. I have respect for both of them, but especially for Sunday Iandare. So we went there to teach, and we taught first time. My grandfather taught about authority, and I taught about how to study the Bible. Because we're talking mostly to preachers when we go to Nigeria. Anybody's welcome to come to the classes, but mostly it's the preachers who come. And they'll come from a long way away. There's a lot of preachers in Nigeria. There's a lot of Christians there. One of the congregations where we were had about 800 people on Sunday morning. And most of them, I don't think, had less than 200. So there were some smaller congregations, but there are a lot of big congregations in Nigeria. But a lot of them have come out of denominationalism very recently. And they're not very well grounded in the truth. Even a lot of the preachers are not. And so we were there trying to help them with that. The second trip, we had seen some problems in the churches, and we were trying to address that. So my grandfather was dealing with the organization of the church, and I was talking about the work of the church. So he would preach or teach for about 3 hours, and then I would teach for 2 hours every day, pretty much. One of the big problems in Nigeria is an organization called World Bible School. I guess my grandfather talked about that some. He would always write, he would draw this box on the blackboard and write scripture for WBS. And he'd say, anybody who has a scripture authorizing World Bible School can just come up there and write that in the box. And that box always stayed empty. Because there's nothing in the Bible that authorizes that type of organization. What they do is they accept contributions from churches and individuals, and then they send out correspondence courses and also give money to preachers and that sort of thing. And that's just not the way that God designed his church. That's not his organization. When I was teaching on the work of the church, I dealt specifically with World Bible School. And what I read an article from their website, which there's a statement in there that says World Bible School shows the pattern or gives the example for how the church should look, or how the organization of the church should look. You know, instead of looking to the Bible for it, they thought they were the example. They knew that the Bible didn't have their type of organization in it. And they don't tell the preachers that they work with in these countries how they are organized either. They just will not tell them. Now, they can figure it out on their own. Sometimes they do. But the World Bible School really tries to keep them in the dark about that. So we were exposing that, and at this place, this was a small place. We were only there for one day. This place was Ashaka. And after my grandfather finished, a guy raised his hand. He said, "But what's wrong with correspondence courses?" And another man jumped up, and he went to the blackboard, and he said, "That's not the problem. The problem's not what they're doing. It's the organization," and he drew it out. And afterwards, we found out this man who was drawing this out was a teacher for World Bible School. And he told Manny Ebong, "I've got to quit. I can't go back to work there now that I see that this is wrong. And so he gave up his income because of the truth. Well, we're planning to go back to Nigeria again this year, hopefully in June or July. That's the wet season. We haven't been there before in the wet season, so there will be a lot of mosquitoes, and travel will be harder, but they say we can do it, so we're going to try it. And as for me, I'm planning to preach some meetings in the western part of South Africa this next year, hopefully. I've had invitations to go to Cape Town and Port Elizabeth and some of those places where I haven't been yet. So I'm looking forward to going there and meeting my brethren out in those places. I met some Zimbabwe preachers about 2 weeks ago, I guess. We had our gospel meeting in Ashawi, and they came all the way from Zimbabwe, which is a long way. And they've invited me to come to Zimbabwe. That probably won't happen next year, but maybe the year after. I would like to go up there. They say that everything's just as bad as what you hear about the situation there. That people are really, they're starving, not to death, but they're starving. And while they were at the house, they received an email that one of the older brethren out there had died from cholera. That's a big problem there right now. And so I'm sure they would want you to keep them in your prayers and help them financially if you can. And that's something we need to keep in mind. Those are our brethren out there. So anyway, that's what God's been doing in my area, at least on my part and some of the other men out there. And I hope that lets you see and understand a little bit about what's going on. You want me to give an invitation? I'll let you do it. We don't do that in South Africa. You know, we in South Africa, well, we do kind of in the tent meetings. But normally, we just end the service, and sometimes somebody will stand up and say, if you want to become a Christian, afterwards, you know, you can talk with somebody about it. And that's about all we say. But it hasn't hurt us, I don't think. But really, it's not a bad thing to invite people to obey the gospel. I'll let you do that.